Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine. Shock, betrayal, disaster. True stories of resilience in financial crises. No retirement for me. I saved and planned for a long one. Then I heard from my doctor. This won't come as a big surprise. Dying makes you look at the world in a different way, the world of money included. Among friends and family, I'm known for hard work and self-discipline. I spent almost two decades at the Wall Street Journal, churning out personal finance columns every week. I saved so diligently that I could have retired at age 51, but instead opted to write books and launch a personal finance website. My self-control extends to exercise. I've run or bicycled pretty much every day since 1995. What was my reward for this life of industry, frugality, and clean living? In May 2024, at age 61, I got an out-of-the-blue diagnosis of cancer, the result of a defective gene. The cancer had metastasized from my lung to my chest, liver, and brain. My oncologist said I might have a year to live. I'm hoping for a tad longer because my body has responded well to treatment. Still, it's only a matter of time before cancer gets the upper hand. In the meantime, I find myself wandering through life with a different mindset from almost everybody else. How so? Here are 19 ways that my thinking and my finances have been transformed by my diagnosis. 1. I spent nearly my entire adult life saving like crazy so I could retire in comfort. And yet, faced with my terminal illness, I have no plans to retire. Instead, I want to keep doing what I've been doing for years, getting up early, making coffee, exercising, writing, and editing, napping after lunch, taking an afternoon walk, enjoying an evening glass of wine. These are the things that bring me pleasure each day, and I have no desire to stop now. 2. Do I regret my decades of frugality, including previously living for 20 years in a modest house I never much liked? Far from it. The money I saved won't go toward my retirement, but it still bought me a lot of happiness because it allowed me to avoid financial worries for much of my adult life. 3. I could spend with reckless abandon now, but my old frugality persists. My partner, Elaine, and I have been living together for 4 years and were already engaged when I got my diagnosis. We married 4 days later, partly because she won't qualify for Social Security survivor benefits unless I'm still alive 9 months after our wedding. Since then, we've taken a few special trips, and we have a few more planned. But I'll only open up my wallet so far. You won't find me paying $5,000 to fly business class to Europe. 4. Never an enthusiastic shopper, I'm now even less inclined to buy new things. Last fall, Elaine insisted I purchase new shoes for my son's December 2024 wedding. I wear those shoes whenever I get the chance, because it's the only way I can justify the cost. Gifting has become a top financial goal. One reason I'm not spending like crazy, I want to make sure I bequeath a healthy sum to Elaine and my two children, now in their 30s, from my previous marriage. I also made some financial gifts right away, including writing large checks to my kids and funding 529 college savings plans for my two grandsons. 6. I've long invested aggressively, keeping 80% or more of my portfolio in stock index funds. Now that I know it's likely I won't live more than another year or two, I'm even more aggressive. Why? I'm no longer investing for my retirement. Instead, I'm investing for my heirs, and their time horizon is far longer than mine. 7. Because old age is no longer in the cards, all kinds of issues are off the table. I don't have to fret over future long-term care costs or whether to choose original Medicare or Medicare Advantage, or how to minimize my retirement tax bill. Instead, my top priority is making sure everything is in good shape for my heirs. 8. As of my 62nd birthday in January of this year, I could have applied for Social Security, but I won't. My goal is to get Elaine a healthy stream of Social Security benefits. After much research, including a consultation with the developer of OpenSocialSecurity.com, a free Social Security strategy calculator, I figured that in our situation, I could skip claiming. Instead, Elaine will claim survivor benefits based on my earnings record when I die. Once she turns 70, she'll swap to a benefit based on her own record. 9. I thought my financial affairs were well organized. I was kidding myself. I've spent months shredding old tax returns, ripping up investment statements, and organizing what remains. I fear that if I don't throw out unneeded paperwork, my family will think it's important, and I will have bequeathed them unnecessary confusion. 10. There's always more to throw away. I've moved 4 times since 2011, shedding possessions on each occasion. Yet I keep finding more things to toss or give away. My 13 years of downsizing have taught me to be ruthless. The fact is, there's nothing that I've unloaded over the past 13 years that I wish I could have back. 11. For years, I've been carting around a box of old mail, notes from old girlfriends, Christmas cards from 1986, letters I got while at college. Mixed in there was some really bad poetry I wrote. Did I carefully review everything in the box? Hardly. I tore up most items after a quick glance and added them to the recycling bin. Am I glad my kids will never see all this stuff? You bet. 12. My finances were pretty simple, but I've been simplifying them even more. I've closed 2 of my 4 credit cards, liquidated a small IRA I inherited from my father, and folded a solo Roth 401k into my Roth IRA. All this is a whole lot easier for me to do now than it will be after my death, when family members will have to produce death certificates and prove they have the authority to act. 13. I've added Elaine to my various insurance policies and made her the joint account holder on my 2 checking accounts. One of those checking accounts is debited for all utilities, gas, water, electricity, internet, cell phones, so it'll be easy for her to take over the household finances. 14. 2 days after I was diagnosed with cancer, I sat down with Elaine and my children to walk them through my estate plan. I quickly realized one conversation wouldn't be enough. Stuff that was second nature to a financial nerd like me was baffling to them. Things like the difference between traditional and Roth IRAs and what a step up in cost basis means. Since then, I've fielded countless questions from Elaine and my kids. 15. Even as I tidy up my affairs, I'm also getting the house fixed up, including taking on a 2-month bathroom remodeling project. I've learned that this is an affliction that often hits men confronting their mortality. They want to make sure all is in good order for their spouse or partner. 16. Time has always been more valuable than money, and never more so than right now. I want to devote each day to the things that I really care about, while minimizing annoyances. What if contractors or customer service reps are being unresponsive? If necessary, I'll play the C card, telling them I won't have long to live. Yes, it's surprisingly effective. 17. As news of my cancer has spread, I've been inundated with countless messages. If I read every book about cancer that's been recommended to me or agreed to meet with everybody who wanted to visit, I would have no time for the things that matter to me. The good news, when a dying man says no, people tend to listen to him. 18. I still want to make a difference in the lives of others. That's why I continue to write and edit every day. In return, I end each day feeling fulfilled and with that pleasant sense of progress that makes me happy. 19. I refuse to feel angry about my bad luck or despondent over the years I'll never enjoy. Instead, I'm determined to make the most of each day. I've long thought happiness has three key ingredients: a sense of financial security, time with family and friends, and doing work I love. My diagnosis has made me even more focused on those three things. Finally, every few months I have a brain MRI and a body scan to see whether the cancer has spread. Every 3 weeks I get blood drawn, which may offer a warning sign of trouble. Someday, maybe next month, maybe next year, the results will not be in my favor. Until then, Elaine and I will continue to make plans for the 4 or 5 months that lie ahead, but no more than that. It's the frugality thing again. We can cancel hotel rooms and rental cars without penalty, but changing airline tickets and cruises can be costly, and I sure don't want to be confronted by both death and cancellation fees. This article was written by Jonathan Clements, who's the founder of HumbleDollar.com and the former personal finance columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Now over to Psychology Now and our article about mental health and the masterclass we're taking here. Your mental health masterclass. We look after our physical health, but our emotional well-being often gets neglected. It's time to make it a priority, and we'll probably split this article in half. Despite a staggering 1 in 4 people in the UK experiencing a mental health problem each year, the invisible nature of it means there's often a tendency to ignore problems and just get on with it. But as Stephen Buckley, head of information at mental health charity Mind, says, mental health is just like our physical health. Everybody has it, and we need to take care of it. He adds, thankfully, we've seen the national conversation on mental health move forward, but with those with mental health problems still face barriers. The topic remains taboo, especially for older generations. A YouGov survey revealed 25% of over 55s thinks it's more difficult for them to discuss mental health than younger people. Some 71% felt this was because, in the past, anxiety and depression were seen as weaknesses rather than health conditions. The road to recovery. These figures are no surprise, especially after the recent COVID-19 pandemic. But it's how we deal with it that's important. Thankfully, there are things we can do. Eating healthily, sleeping well, exercising, and seeking help are all key, said Stephen. Different treatments work a lot differently for different people, and the journey to recovery won't always be easy. Here, Mind shares its advice on 3 common mental health issues. 1, depression. What is it? In its mildest form, it means being repeatedly in low spirits. And at its most severe, it can be life-threatening, making you feel suicidal. The impact? Symptoms can include feeling low, numb, worthless, or without hope, says Stevens. You may sleep too much or too little and withdraw from social contact. Help yourself. List activities, people, and places that make you feel good, and try to find ways to bring these things into your daily routine. Do something new. This can boost your mood and break unhelpful patterns of thinking. You could try volunteering. It makes you feel better and less alone. Try self-help. Explore cognitive behavioral therapy. Anxiety. What is it? Feeling anxious is a natural response when we feel under threat, but if you regularly experience anxiety, including panic attacks, which are strong, last a long time, and are difficult to control, you may need help. The impact? You avoid situations that may make you feel anxious. You'll find it hard to go about your everyday life or do things you enjoy. Help yourself focus on breathing, especially during a panic attack. Inhale through your nose and out through your mouth, counting from 1 to 5. Try complementary and alternative therapies, including meditation, aromatherapy, massage, yoga, and reflexology to aid relaxation. Not sure if you have a problem? Read on to find out more about the secret signs of anxiety. And here's a sidebar before we go on. Could you be sad? Does your mood and energy dip in the winter months? SAD is a mood disorder or depression that comes and goes in a seasonal pattern. Symptoms, including a persistent low mood, anxiety, loss of interest in everyday activities, irritability, feeling lethargic, sleeping for longer, craving carbs, and gaining weight, are more apparent during winter. What helps? When it comes to SAD, the same rules apply as to general depression, said Dr. Jeff Foster. drjefffoster.co.uk. He suggests exercise, a healthy diet, reducing alcohol intake, socializing, and keeping mentally active as ways to reduce symptoms, as well as getting outside as much as you can during daylight hours. Now, let's go on and see what they have to say about obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. What is it? An anxiety disorder with obsessions, unwelcome thoughts, urges, and worries that appear in your mind, making you feel anxious, and compulsions, repetitive activities to reduce anxiety, such as checking a door is locked or repeating phrases. The impact? You might avoid situations that trigger it, including work or seeing friends or family. You may feel ashamed of your thoughts or feel the need to hide your OCD. Help yourself. Talk to someone you trust or write down feelings to discuss together. And learn to relax. Manage these and try techniques such as deep breathing or mindfulness. And try peer support. This brings together people who have had similar experiences. It helps you feel accepted and confident. And finally for today, no more feeling anxious. Millions of us are experiencing anxiety, often without even realizing it. Most of us probably think we know what anxiety feels like. Your heart races, you're short of breath, and your body is bathed in a sheen of sweat. But there are plenty of hidden signs, too. Follow this advice on how to spot the hidden signs and do something about it. Anxiety is what we feel when we are worried, tense, or afraid, says Nikki Lidbetter, CEO of Anxiety UK. It can be caused by a number of factors, including feelings of uncertainty, physical health problems, stress, and your childhood experiences. It's thought that around 3 million people in the UK have an anxiety disorder, and while clammy hands and a pounding heart could signal anxiety, some signs are less obvious. Here are the more subtle symptoms to look out for. You overly dramatize small failures. There's a catastrophizing nature to anxiety that makes you perceive things being much worse than they actually are, says Nikki. If you're overdramatic, you may have an over-the-top reaction to a small failing, which could lead to a meltdown or cause you to stay at home for the next few days, unable to face the world. And next time, we'll look at what is stress. Now, in this episode of AARP The Bulletin, we have a number of articles on fraud. The one we're going to look at today is AI scams reach new threat levels. You may not even be able to trust your own eyes or ears. The phone call came out of nowhere. At the other end, it was the unmistakable voice of her daughter. "Mom, I really messed up. Please help me." Then a man came on the line who claimed to have kidnapped her daughter and demanded a ransom. In another part of the world, a widow thought she had found love again, online. A woman had sent images and videos of herself with talk of spending the rest of their lives together. First, though, she had to finish her job on an ocean-based oil rig and couldn't afford to fly out to visit. The widow kept sending the money until her bank told her it was a scam. Neither of these scams are new. What's new is the level of sophistication, thanks to artificial intelligence, that criminals use to create seemingly real voices or images. And the problem is about to get much worse. AI used for fraudulent reasons has become so frequent that the FBI issued a warning in December cautioning the public to not automatically trust something that might seem real even to our own eyes. The AI enhancements to these scams are hard to spot even by experts. Before 2024, we had not seen one decent AI scam, says David McClellan, founder and CEO of Social Catfish. There had been some tools you could download and have AI deep fakeish type videos generated, but they were very fake and not believable. From March 2024, we've seen a huge surge in deep fakes. When it comes to the AI tool used to get that done, criminals tend to follow one of three paths. One, voice duplication. Using a recording of someone's voice that's just a few seconds long, a crook can use AI to replicate that voice almost perfectly, often well enough to deceive a loved one. That makes this tool especially popular for those running a grandparent scam. The way to prevent that is for every family member to have a code word, said the Haywood Talcove CEO of government business at LexisNexis Risk Solutions. Unless the code word is used, hang up and then call your relative. I guarantee they're not going to know what you're talking about. 2. Phony photos. Not long ago, scammers could scour the internet to find random photos they could use as part of their scam. Now they rely on AI to generate hundreds of images to seemingly corroborate whatever tale they may use to get their hooks in victims. A recent survey found that 72% of Americans couldn't tell the difference between an AI image and a real one, and the number of wrong guesses increased among older people. And 3, video deepfakes. As AI gets more advanced, it's capable of creating not just more realistic still images, but also videos. These deep fake videos can be so convincing that some people might think they're having a video call with a real person. Keeping pace with the speed of this technology is challenging, even for experts. Realistically, even as soon as mid-year, we may not be able to detect this stuff because it's getting that good, McClellan says. And we have a sidebar. AARP can help protect you from fraud. AARP has put together a dedicated team of fraud fighters and volunteers to help protect you from scams. Here are some of our resources that you can use. Fraud Watch Network. Our website, aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork, offers tip sheets on the most common frauds today and a map where you can see what's being reported in your area. AARP Fraud Watch Network Helpline. This support line, 877-908-3360, is free. That number again, 877-908-3360. Trained specialists provide guidance on what to do next and how to avoid scams. Focus on cryptocurrency ATMs. AARP has led a national effort to raise awareness on the methods criminals use to steal from victims. Our recent focus has been on cryptocurrency ATMs. As a result, 19 of AARP's state offices are pushing for better protection from fraud involving ATMs. Victim Support Sessions, an online program, AARP.org/fraud support, provides a safe place for people to address the emotional impact of fraud. Community Education, AARP holds events across the country, in person and virtually, many led by our thousands of passionate fraud fighter volunteers. Find out more about this at states.aarp.org. The Perfect Scam, our award-winning podcast, explores scams from the viewpoint of both victims and law enforcement. Find the lineup of episodes at aarp.org/theperfectscam. And be protected. AARP members save on identity theft and device protection plans from Norton. Go to aarp.com/Norton-benefits. Now, in our remaining time, we're going to look for a few tips. Under Stop Paying for Storage, old record albums and CDs. If you can get music online, why are you keeping it? And don't hold on to those for financial value. CDs are out. You're not saving those. You can donate them to a thrift store. Vinyl records are in demand, so a record store might buy those. Childhood trophies. Nobody wants that, Poplin says. Those things are janky and cheap. You could offer it to your kid, but they'll probably laugh that you're still holding on to it. Kids' toys and clothes. Parents often hold on to these items with the notion that they could be useful for their grandchildren. Keep that stuff to a minimum. This person suggests keeping only a bin or two that will fit in your home, rather than paying for storage. Parents make assumptions about what their kids will or will not want. Toy trends come and go, but things that might be worth keeping are special items. Like my father made this really cool wooden box with all different latches. And family heirlooms. Often we keep such items out of a sense of obligation. But you might be wasting your space holding on to things that nobody wants, and it's not valuable to you if you're willing to put it somewhere that's not in your home. So don't save these in storage. Well, folks, we have reached the end of our time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.